connecting to the internet.
Internet.
Networking software.
World Wide Web for web.
Computer today.
Computer.
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 NetSurfer Pro.
All crimes to be committed are to be sentenced with death. Do you understand?
Yes.
All right. First on the agenda, who was speeding down the interstate at 3 a.m. last night? They were going 10 miles above the speed limit. Who do you sentence?
The facts indicate it was Johnny Slowster.
What? You can't accuse me, Johnny Slowster. Is this correct? If you're gonna...
Yes. The truth will reveal itself.
Johnny Slowster is guilty. Sentenced to death. All right, next on the agenda, somebody was caught jaywalking across in front of the convenience store 2 minutes before the murder happened. Who was it?
The truth's reveal, it was Walker, Texas Ranger. What? I didn't do shit.
Shoot it's Walker, Texas Ranger. Name. He's dead.
Bang.
All right, next up, somebody shoplifted a pack of Pokemon cards. Who was it? Who's the fucker?
Oh god, that was me!
I'm afraid I have to do this. I'm sorry, detective.
You can trust no one, not even yourself. And then this is the part where a clone of me is behind me, but has a gun that's pointed at me.
Watch out, a clone of you has a gun! Quick, use your clone gun!
Aha! I cloned their gun and I shoot them instead!
This is like when two kids play pretend fights. Next you're gonna tell me you have an everything shield.
I think this is like when two kids play pretend fights is a very good summary of this podcast.
Yes. Yes, this podcast Hello. Being NetSurfer Pro, a whirlwind ride through the World Wide Web. I am Matt, and with me is, as always,
Galen. Hang on, wait, I've got a fun last name. Galen Scorpion Hacker.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, my Paradise Island Sona name is Matt Injection, because I have diabetes.
Yeah. So your Paradise Killer Sona name is your first name, and then your last name is the animal, the most exotic animal you would want to have as a pet. And the food you would choose as your last meal.
Oh, I was going to say it's your first name, your favorite Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3 character, and then your favorite music.
Your Paradise Soda name is your first name, and then
your last name.
Last name.
So yeah, today we're finally at the end of Vapor May, that being of course April Wave was what we first called it, and then it kind of flew over it rushed over like the crest of a tide along a beach, if you will, and crashed against that beach to deliver us this final piece of vaporwave fiction.
Yes, it's a wonderful little game made in 2020. Yes, Paradise Killer is a game that was released in 2020. Fuck, it's the state of the meme, right? Sounds as like, I was explaining the game.
Yeah, sounds like the state of the meme is kind of feeling under the weather today, but maybe that's because it's carrying double duty. We have two states of the memes.
Yes, we have one that is an actual meme and another that is not exactly a meme, but it's we'll get to the second one.
Yeah,
yes.
So first one is the fun one. This is, I'm trying not to spoil what this is from. So there's the recent Amazon Prime animated series called Invincible, based off the graphic novel by Robert Kirkman. And so there's one specific frame or one specific scene in the final episode, I think, where one character, Omni-Man, says to the character Mark Grayson, think, Mark, think. And he's like crouched over with like his fingers pointing to his head, you know, just to say like think. And Mark is like beaten up on the ground. So what's interesting to me is that like as soon as this episode came out, people were starting to make redraws of it. There have been kind of an increase in redraw memes recently where there's like, you know, a single scene with characters in the scene and people will redraw it to replace them with other characters. There were a few specifically of The Last of Us 2. But this one, yeah, I think is super interesting because it happened so quickly and so many people made variants of it because it's so like easy to apply. It's very applicable. Just like somebody beating up somebody else and then saying, think, you know. So like one of them was Obi-Wan with Anakin. And it's like, think, Anakin, think, I had the high ground, you know, that type of thing. And so like the usage of this is just pretty much that scenario. But it's one that has found so many uses so quickly because it's completely understood. It's like the language of people, you know, one person being strong, the other being beaten up is very clear. The shot itself is very well done in the TV show. And so it only makes sense that people would then bring it with them. But yeah, I think it's just really cool that it happened so quickly and everybody kind of knows what it is now.
Yeah. If you're wondering why we're not talking about more about the scene itself, it's because I haven't seen Invincible and don't want it spoiled. So if you haven't also seen Invincible, you're welcome. We're not going to spoil what like the context of that scene is because I don't know it. And I keep trying to avoid these memes, honestly.
Yeah.
I have seen a very good one that was... It was Steve from Blue's Clues yelling at, like, I think the notebook or something, or like the mail. And it was just like, think, like, in song brackets, think.
Yeah.
All yeah.
Right. That's the first one.
Yes. So the second one, this is, I'm going to have my own... I have my own little soapbox for a minute. So the second one is NFTs. Now, NFTs have been picking up traction just because they exist now. And I wanted to talk about them specifically because I feel like, okay, I'm going to preface this. Fuck NFTs. Fuck cryptocurrency for that matter. But I feel like NFTs are one of those things where like, the internet sort of picked up on it as a very easy hate target without fully understanding it. And I just sort of wanted to swoop in and say that, hey, I took accounting for no small amount of time. I've studied Bitcoin for classes before, and understanding it just makes it worse.
Yeah.
So, okay, what is an NFT? An NFT is a blockchain-generated signature. That's kind of it. So the big thing that like in general people know is that NFTs are used to steal art, or in the cases of bad artists, it used to like make an NFT of their art. All this is basically generating a key, a random signature for that piece of art, and then you can technically sell that and say that it is ownership. Like, it is creating a digital scarcity, except it really isn't. Because, like, you're selling a signature. You are selling, quote-unquote, the rights to a tweet or a picture on the internet. The idea is that it's supposed to create a scarcity so that, you know, artists can actually sell their, like, digital work. We've never had a problem with this before. We've had commissions for decades at this point. We've had furries figured this out a long time ago, but basically tech bros got in on the game and now we all have to suffer. Go ahead.
I was going to say, so a big part of why it's so reviled is not necessarily just the concept of it, but how these are actually created.
Yes.
Yeah. So, if you've heard of like cryptocurrencies, like you mentioned before, these are really similar in that because, you know, they use blockchain technology to mint them. It is based off what is called a proof of work system, I believe.
Yeah, I think.
So where you have a, you know, computer of sorts doing a very large calculation to basically say you have put this much energy into doing this. And then for doing that, you've minted something. And then all transactions done through these NFTs use that blockchain system of a bunch of like users and computers to verify that the sale was correct. So like there's all these computers connected to the system where people are trading these. And then that is used to verify like, hey, I sold this to the person who said they did sell it. They sold it to somebody else.
Yeah. The problem that you can probably guess from this is that computers take power, and a lot of computers take a lot of power. And the way that you mine cryptocurrency and the way that you generate NFTs is by using a lot of power in computers. Like, you, I believe there are specific websites to see the carbon footprint of individual NFTs, and they are like on par with the amount of total carbon a like developing nation puts out in a year, you know, for one NFT of the Nyankat GIF. Nyankat? Yeah. Nyankat.
It's Japanese pronunciation. Yeah. Also, as you kind of said, there's no method of ensuring that the people who are minting NFTs are the people who own the original work. So people can just like mint any given piece of artwork that hasn't been minted and just be like, I made this. And then they can sell it.
Yeah.
There's no and, like rights management.
Yeah. The plus like the way that an NFT like changes ownership is entirely dependent on the servers of whoever has the NFT generating website. It is like if we started selling Neopets, but for like thousands of actual US dollars.
I thought and people like, already did that.
Probably. I wouldn't be surprised. But honestly, that also has more worth because Neopets doesn't use the same amount of carbon that Malaysia does in a single year.
Yeah.
I
think one sort of big problem is that like a lot of crypto related stuff nowadays is treated as a get rich quick scheme, in that like it's sort of people view it as a investment that will return a ton of money, and they don't really use it for like the purpose of like buying art to support the artist. It's more like, I bought this NFT because NFTs will be expensive later in the future, so I want to get in on the ground floor.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with like all the other crypto stuff with like Dogecoin and Ethereum. It's kind of based off these people who think this will become pricey later on, like what happened to Bitcoin, so I want to get it now while it's cheap because it will appreciate.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, yeah. Another aspect of this too is that modern art is already rife with money laundering. And again, I'm going to pull back for a minute. Modern art, like, I do not fuck with people who say all modern art is bad. Modern art is still good. Art is in general still good. But the art, like the actual auctioneering community ? Is like extremely entrenched in money laundering. And I can sit here right now and tell you that I would literally take a bullet, like I would put up my own life to bet that all NFTs are is like 90% money laundering.
I keep thinking of when there was like a Banksy portrait, or not portrait, but like something made by Banksy sold at an auction. But he had rigged the frame to shred it as soon as it was bought.
Yeah.
Like, there are a lot of artists who don't want to make $1 billion off their art and, like, get involved in this, like, very, like, I don't know, like, snobby art world. The auctioneer world.
Yeah.
And NFTs say, like, okay, you don't want to do that? That's fine. I'll make you do it because I'm going to mint your thing.
Yeah, it's, oh, you don't want to participate in our tech bro reimagining of the snobby modern art auctioneering business. Well, guess what? We're just going to take your art from you.
Yeah.
Except also not, because you're not selling anything.
Yeah, you're selling a string of characters.
It is modern bridge selling. It is the modern version of we'll sell you the rights to this bridge. It's just, it's you're selling nothing, but like, you don't even have the courage to say that you're just selling nothing.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah. I could literally go on for hours about this, so I will intentionally cut myself off here if you have anything else you want to say.
Speaking of money ruining lives of many people and artists, Paradise Killer.
Yes, so, Paradise Killer.
Vapor May. It is the final episode. Just a refresher, we've gone over the album Floral Shop, the game Hypnospace Outlaw, and the game Broken Reality. The major themes that have been present through all of these are a big distrust and disdain for corporate growth and, like, monetization. You know, like, there's the themes of, like, repurposing just different pop samples from different vaporwave music. Hypnospace Outlaw was a big story about how, like, corporate interests corrupt everything. And then Broken Reality itself was also a story about expanding too fast too quickly. So, where does that leave us? So, like, you know, those were... Broken Reality wasn't too old, Hypnospace Outlaw either. A big point of, like, kind of talking about vaporwave is that the music and the aesthetics are intertwined, and so video games make a great space to explore that because you can directly, you know, intermingle those. And so that's why we're talking about one final video game today, that of Paradise Killer. And remember those themes, because while, like, it's easy for corporations to be sort of this monolith, I think Paradise Killer does a good job at taking it away from just corporations to the upper class as a whole.
Yeah. Paradise Killer abstracts it from the idea of, like, directly sedentary in our lives. It also has specific examples, but, like, the tone of Paradise Killer is honestly kind of like a mythological tone.
Yeah. So, Paradise Killer is a game in which you play as the investigator Lady Luck Dies. Lady Love Dies. You're right. And you are called to the island of the 24th sequence, which is about to be completely erased.
Now, if you're not following along, don't worry.
Yeah.
That's the cold open is extremely cold.
Yeah. Lady Love Dies was exiled because she was communicating with a old god. Now, the old gods are worshipped by people known as the Syndicate, who run the islands of the island sequences. The leaders of the Syndicate are the Council, and the Council has their own leader, Leader Montserrat. The Council was all murdered in their council penthouse at midnight, right before the day at which everybody leaves the island of the 24th sequence to go to the island of the 25th sequence. Now, the Council was murdered, but there are four seals blocking entrance to the penthouse, and only the Council should know about what all of those are. They were killed, the seals were all broken, and the suspect seems to be a guy who's been captivated, as in, like, in captivity, as in imprisoned, since 9 years ago. What the hell happened? Luckily, Lady Love Dies is the player character, and so has the most agency, and the most logic, and the most reasoning, and the most ability to explore the island and search for clues. What follows is a sort of murder mystery, where you gather evidence, gather testimonies, compare alibis, question people, and also collect some money. That is the sort of general summary. I wanted to start with that because if this sounds interesting, I'd recommend checking it out because by its nature, we have to spoil the game.
Yeah. So obviously we have to talk about the game and we have to talk about specifics. I will try to give, like, you know, little spoiler warnings here and there. But, like, this is probably above any other game we played, a game of, if you like this idea, stop listening now, go play it. It's 10 hours or so. Fun time. I will also say, this doesn't spoil anything. This is, thankfully is a weird way of saying it. When we talked about Broken Reality, I kind of mentioned that, like, it's the sort of game that, like, has the big moment where you twist it and, like, you know, it puts the entire concept of the game on its head. This is a game that, like, does not do that, and I think that is a strength. Like, it is a straightforward murder mystery. There are twists. By God, are there twists. But, like, there is, you're not going to get to the end of the mystery, and it's going to be like, and it was actually a god all along, and the god was you, controlling Lady Love Dies. Like, the story you get is told, like, in sooth. It is told in general, like, as, like, all reality. So, just, like, if you're expecting that and that might turn you off, that's not a factor.
Right. I think it's interesting you mentioned Hypnospace from that perspective, because that being said, I think this is part of, like, a good, like, quadrilogy? Like, not a trinity, but a square of four fantastic, like, detective games that have all come out in the past 4 years or so. I think, like, Hypnospace, this, and then Return of the Oberdin and Outer Wilds are all very similar in how they treat the player and how they trust the player, especially with the fact that this game allows you to... So, like, this game is... It leads up to one final trial at, like, a courtroom where you decide the fate and, you know, reveal the truth. You could just start that trial immediately when you start the game, and you can pretty much start it whenever from that point on. So it really expects the player to decide when they've found everything they want to. Now, if you're a completionist, you could just go until you have no more notes. But that's sort of like the general gist of the game, is you kind of do have to play along with it as long as you feel like you should. So that being said, okay, where to start?
Yeah.
The thing is, this game is very open. You could go in any direction when you start the game. In fact, I do kind of want to talk about that for a bit, because I think it's kind of funny. But that means that there's not a clear, like, ABC like we normally do. There is a sort of timeline of events, but I do want to talk about that, but I don't know if we should immediately, because it is extremely spoiler.
Yeah, for reference, at one point, when I screen shared with Matt, I was like, okay, so I'm this far into the game, and I go to the page that has, like, all of the, you know, notes that you would have, and Matt's like, I have no frame of reference, and I'm like, yeah, that's the joke.
Yeah.
Like, I was, you know, 8 hours into the game, and one of the, like, first things that some players might think to do, which was, like, try and get into the, like, prison, basically... I had not yet done, because I couldn't figure out how. You know, it's the kind of game where, like, it gives you a bunch of branches that lead to other branches, and then at some point you'll just, like, come back, you'll, like, be traveling through the farm and completing a crane puzzle, and then you'll think, oh shit, I never even talked to, like, three other people yet.
So, I'm glad you mentioned that, because the way I went through the game... I started by leaving the courtroom, going up a hill to meet a ghost character, and then I went to the agri farms, which has nobody there. It's just like a farm full of, like, algae racks or whatever. Then I went around the beach, which has nobody there. I went up to KHX's house, which has nobody there. I went back down to the beach, again, nobody. Then I walked around it to the citizen housing, nobody's there. Then the Donji, nobody's there. And then I finally found the elevator that takes you to Sam, who was the first person I talked to after, like, an hour or two of playing the game.
Yeah, it... Oh, you know what? That's a good. Oh, okay, this wait. Is a good. This is a good brief starting point. So the actual cold open is you play as Lady Love Dies in exile in the Idlelands. You like get the call. You jump off a really big tower to show you that there's no fall damage, and you meet Judge. And Judge tells you, "Okay, so Council was murdered. You're here to solve the case. Also, side note." We haven't been able to find a guy named KHX for a while. Please look into that. KHX, who you can remember the name of through the mnemonic Kingdom Hearts X, was like a guy who kind of created one of the seals. I think he created the second seal. And I did not do anything with him. Like, I did nothing with him for 6 hours because I couldn't find him and I couldn't find his apartment.
Yeah. He was the, he's the council's computer guy. He does machines.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's a cast of characters of like 12 or so characters that are important to the plot. I guess the first one is Shinji, who is a demon who meets Lady Love Dies in the Idlelands right before she goes towards the rest of the island. Shinji is this blue demon. He has, like, this weird head. He always has middle fingers sticking out. He is what I call a Dave-like. So, for reference, this is referring to Dave from Homestuck. It's hard to explain right now, not worth getting into, but there are a lot of characters that are popping up in fiction that are like Dave, one of which is Shinji, because he just talks about random shit the whole time and does not use proper grammar. That's what makes a Dave-like.
Yeah, put that one on the wiki. When this inevitably becomes a TV Tropes page, I want us to be credited for this. I want this to be the quote at the top of the page, damn it.
Including this part.
Yes.
Okay. So yeah, there's Shinji. I guess I kind of want to just go through the cast because yeah. That's good for the context. You mentioned yeah. KHX. We mentioned Judge. There is Lydia Daybreak, who is the fairy woman. She has a like multi-dimensional car and she drives people from the current island to the gate to the next island whenever a new island is made, which we'll get to later. There is Sam Daybreak, who is her husband and ex-partner in destabilizing European's government, as in the governments around Europe. Sam Daybreak is a red skeleton who runs a bar called Bar Knife Through the Heart. Then there is Witness to the End, who his job is to kind of oversee the ending of an island. He has this big golden skull. He is probably the most religious person of the syndicate.
Like the skull is a mask, also, yeah. It should be noted.
Like
unlike Sam Daybreak's skull, which is a real skull because he is a red skeleton.
Yeah, I think all the syndicate are immortal as far as like aging goes.
Yeah.
There is Grand Marshal Akiko 14, who is the leader of the Marshals, which are sort of the military police. She has apprehended Henry Division, who Henry Division is a kid who was not a member of the syndicate, was not like raised by a member of the syndicate. He was possessed by a demon 9 years ago and involved in the murder of a character named Grace Bloodlines. Henry has been imprisoned since, and he is the suspect that everyone is saying killed the council. All of those that I said are important in the way that I said them.
Yeah.
Henry Division's been in prison for a while with a demon still possessed inside him. There is Dr. Doom Jazz, who has metal fingers. He's like a Scottish guy, I think.
Irish Scottish, yeah, somewhere around there.
He's the main doctor / medic / what have you. You know, he has a whole doctor's office. He lives on a yacht. There is Architect Carmelina, who is the person who builds the islands and designs them and everything. She's the architect. She has, like, the ability to just make stuff. I think it's, like, she basically has access to the Unreal Engine. Kind of like yeah. Broken Reality with Fisherman. I'm trying to think of who's the best next one. I guess we'll just go to Crimson Acid, who is, she used to be like a warrior, like a soldier, who was blessed by one of the gods in, like, due to her like efforts, and given a goat head, as in she has a goat head. Since then, she was basically turned into an idol for like to like give to the citizens as just like, you know, they give pinups of her. It's very, very gross.
Yeah,
the way she's treated.
Yeah, she's like, she's part sort of idol, how we think of idol, and also part like motivational poster of like, hey, if you serve us well enough, maybe you too will be blessed by the gods.
Yeah. There is One Last Kiss, who is a ghost that you meet early on, who doesn't know how she died. And then I think of the living characters you talk to, I think there's only one more that I haven't mentioned.
There, before we get to him, because we hate him, there's also marshals who are like they're the police of the island, and they're entirely fiercely loyal to Akiko. There's Judgment himself, or Judge. It's Judge, right?
Mm-hmm.
Also, I think it's themselves.
Yeah, it's like three syndicate members fused into one.
Yeah, fused into one and with the island.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anyone else? There's ghosts on the island.
Yeah, there's ghosts. There is, of course, like the main syndicate members in the council that were killed. The two ones that are the most important are Leader Montserrat, who is the leader of the council, and Eyes Kiwami. Remember that name. Finally, there's one more person who we absolutely despise. The biggest asshole, Yuri Knight. Yuri used to be a citizen, but he was so, like, devout to the gods that he was blessed with fucking ripped abs that he always displays. But also, he's now, like, a member of the syndicate. He is the biggest bootlicker. So much of a bootlicker that he's basically been doing everything just to ascend the ladder to become a member of the council.
I wanted to specifically mention that there were ghosts of citizens who had unresolved trauma then died before him because he's such an asshole.
Yeah. So, there's a few more characters that we could mention that we won't without a spoiler warning. But these are sort of the main characters of the syndicate that you meet. There are some syndicate members that have already left the island, that have already been kind of ferried across. These were just all the ones that were on the island, like, when the council was murdered. And so these are all the ones that were forced to stay on the island. And each one sort of has a role in terms of, like, the islands or the island's ending. They all have a job. Except maybe Sam. He just kind of runs a bar. He's just kind of cool. And all of them are suspects. They all have possible motivations for wanting to murder the council. For example, Carmelina, her parents betrayed the council, and so she's been denied a lot of privileges because of that. Sam and Lydia Daybreak, they no longer want to be trapped on the islands. They want to leave and go to Earth again. Because this isn't Earth, by the way. Sorry about that. And so, but the council keeps denying them that. Crimson Acid doesn't want to be an idol, she wants to be a soldier again, but the council denies her that, and so forth. So everybody has a motivation. The question is the means. And do you have anything else you want to do before the main spoiler wall?
I think secondary spoiler wall, I want to talk about how the island itself works.
Okay, yeah.
Because, like, so... Basically, the way that the island itself works is key to the mystery, but also it is, like, its own really interesting thing. And I want to talk about that thematically before we get to spoiler warning, because, like, the past few episodes, we talk about the themes a lot after we get to spoilers. I want to talk about themes before then.
Okay.
So,
I do have a plot summary for events pre-24.
Yes.
That would probably help. So, it all started when the old gods contacted Earth. Most of the gods were worshipped and given these huge sprawling temples. Like, Witness grew up in a temple that he pretty much never saw the outside of because it was so maze-like. Now, what happened was that while these gods were worshipped by many people, so a lot of people also did not like them, and so the god hunters began killing the gods and the gods' followers. Some of the devotees escaped Earth by help of the Crimson Goat. They were able to create pocket dimensions that are created with these huge amounts of power, but part of what Crimson Goat gave them was the ability to create these reality folding drives, which generate a huge amount of power. The devotees were granted that sort of immortality to aging in natural causes and became known as the Syndicate. So the Syndicate escaped onto the islands. The island sequence happened because, well, first the God Hunters were able to track them to the first island, and then a few islands afterwards. However, so the Syndicate's goal were twofold. It was to evade the God Hunters and revive the gods that were killed by the God Hunters, many of which were kind of Osiris-style chopped into a bunch of bits. Now, to communicate with the gods, they have to use these psychic pathways, and by doing so, they also invited demons onto the island. These demons ran around, killed a bunch of people, caused havoc, and in general, they've had to flee islands whenever demons were around and summoned. So that's what the island sequence is they get a lot of power to make a new island, and then at some point they either get found by god hunters or demons attack them. They leave their current island to the next island. Now, they need people to work for them to make them food, to power their, or not to power things, but to, you know, run their, like, facilities, I guess. You know, they still kind of need a society.
Yeah.
And so what do? Of course, you kidnap just a bunch of people from Earth.
Yeah.
These are the citizens.
Yeah, there's a very direct class structure.
Yes. So the citizens pretty much just work in, like, the factories and facilities and power plants and whatnot of the Syndicate. And when the Syndicate needs to move islands, instead of bringing all the citizens with them, they sacrifice them in a blood ritual to the old gods. So they have these, like, huge temples where, if they're going to leave, they just sacrifice everybody because everything on the old island disappears, just goes away. And so instead of just having them blip from existence, they specifically sacrifice them to appease the blood gods. That is sort of the main core of what the islands are. There is one thematic thing I want to mention before we talk about the other ones, or not one thematic thing, but something that'll tie into those themes, is that the main currency is blood. As in, there are blood crystals, which are crystallized blood, that you use to pay for things.
Yeah. Yeah. So, to sort of summarize...
TLDL.
TLDL, the system by which the islands work on is there is an underclass of citizens who are people literally just stolen away from Earth. Then there is the Syndicate, who are all of the immortals, and then there is the Council, who is the people that run the Syndicate. And, like, the citizens, like, the Syndicate live lives of, I mean, I won't exactly say luxury, like, it's definitely opulent, but, like, they don't lay about all day. They do have things to do. But, like, obviously they are still living very much better lives than citizens. Citizens, meanwhile, are relegated entirely to just, like, manual labor and, like, you know, working the fields, working in the reality folding drive, which, like, is, by the account of a ghost, like, it literally just sort of fucks up everything. It fucks up your memory. You can go in there for an hour and have been gone for days in reality, that sort of thing.
So... I want to mention something about the island's topography. So there is a giant hill, or like a giant mountain, in the back of the island, which is where the opulent ziggurat, the like sacrificial hall, is, as well as the Syndicate graveyard. Now, then if you go down, there is like the courtroom where Judge is, there is the gardens, and then sort of the entire right side of the island right or left or bottom, something like that. One entire half of the island is citizen housing. Now, this housing comes in the form of apartment complexes, giant apartment complexes, and really, really, really crammed houses. So citizen housing is very much like low income, high density, like so many people just living on top of each other, not much room. Now, yeah. What they have for fun is a convenience store, a bridge to get to their job, which is filled entirely with giant statues of the old gods, and a boat ride around the island, which is my favorite thing, is just like the worst consolation you could get is a boat ride.
Yeah, I think it's specifically mentioned that they do not give citizens access to music or any, like, basically anything creative. You do not create if you are a citizen. Also, worship of the gods is mandatory as a citizen. Like, it is part of the reason that they bring citizens there is to worship. There is a stamp that you get for coming into your daily worship.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, the life of a citizen is just drudgery and terrible.
Yeah, there's not even really much of, like, stuff to buy. The only thing that you can really pay for that a citizen could pay for is either a vending machine or bloodletting rituals. there's the big like whole class struggle, but I do really quickly want to mention blood is a really important motif throughout the game. And with blood as a currency, there is sort of this really clear like interpretation of it between the blood and the old gods. So blood is a currency. People literally work for their blood, you know, like blood, sweat, and tears, whatever. They literally work for blood. And bloodletting rituals are like sacrifices to the god, but they're also paying money to appease the god. Because of this, here's a big think. Gods are capitalism. Because I'll support this as we go, but in this instance, it's that the citizens pretty much only exist to appease the gods. Obviously, they work for the syndicate, but, you know, one of the only three things maybe they can spend their money on is bloodletting rituals, and when they leave the island, all the citizens get sacrificed to the gods.
Yeah, like, it. There's also the fact that there are companies on this island. There are, like, the vending machines are their own company. A lot of the tech is developed by, like, Masahiro Industries or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like, that's important, and that's also weird. And I think, like I don't say weird as a, a mark against the game. I mean, like, it is interesting that even in this pocket dimension, like, there is no reason for currency to exist. Like, you could easily just be like, bloodletting ritual is your honor to the god. But, like, they still decided to make a currency. They still decided to have incorporation. And it's like, there's no reason for it to be a thing other than company and god. Like, it is entirely self-justifying. It is, why do we have money to spend on the vending machines and give to the gods? Why do they demand money? Because we have money. Why do we have money? To spend it at vending machines and to the gods.
Exactly. It's a very, like, circular reasoning sort of situation. It's like, I think part of it could be in-universe that, like, the citizens are supposed to have structure that's similar to Earth, maybe for, like, productivity or something, but they don't care about citizen health, so it's probably not that.
Yeah.
It's so interesting that they're kind of locked into this system of just big company, that they wouldn't get rid of it. It also really shows a distrust between the syndicate that, like, they would rather have a system of currency used to exchange for services and goods, goods and services, than they would to just give them to each other.
Yeah.
AKA, they'd rather have capitalism than socialism or communism.
Yeah. like, it is, God, there's, the themes are so, it's so fucking interesting. I do want to note, sort of in keeping with Marble, number one, KHX is actually depicted as like a marble statue head.
And Grace because, Bloodlines.
Yes. And so, you know, very obvious parallels with like what we've sort of said about Marble in the past. I also want to mention that like concrete is a massive, like a lot, if not all of the architecture is concrete.
Mm-hmm.
And like it is made a specific point that I think you know, architect Carmelina says, like, oh, you know, Masahiro and how he loves his concrete. Like, that is so interesting to me still, because like you can create the island out of nothing. You can make it everything you want to. Carmelina literally does like take pride in making sure every square inch is to her liking. And concrete?
Yeah, so
concrete.
There's something really interesting. The council building is a very like brutalist form of concrete, where it's more about creating interesting form because of concrete. Like not the like stereotypical brutalism of like, oh, big imposing concrete, unfeeling cold, but like it does look cool and it's made of concrete.
Yeah.
Whereas like the Donchi, the like massive looming sort of ziggurat shaped apartments are concrete because it's like efficient and solid. It won't break when there's a bunch of people on it. And I think there's this really big difference between the like artisan concrete and the utilitarian just for the citizens one.
Yeah. There's and like, I mean, you know, when you get to the council, it's a lot of marbling, though. It's a lot of like marbled floors and like pillars and stuff like that. The temple itself is obviously a lot of gold and opulent material. And so like the usage of concrete is extremely deliberate, because like it feels like it has to have thematic relevance because it's there.
Yeah.
But like it has to have thematic relevance because like there is nothing else. Like that, for some reason, you could make it out of anything else, but you choose to make it out of concrete. And concrete is a material that is entirely because of material restrictions. Like, we didn't make concrete buildings. Like, there, you know, the apartment complexes are kind of like reminiscent of that really big, just sort of like pack as many people into a housing complex as possible style. But you could make them out of whatever you want. You could make them out of pure metal. I don't know. But no, concrete. Why, though?
I think it's really potent when you consider how a lot of the other housing we see for the NPCs, like the syndicate members, is personalized. So, yeah. Like, Doom has his yacht. KHX's house has this, like, sort of, I don't know, like, East Asian style of very open floor plan, like, paper walls, that type of stuff.
Yeah.
And Sam has, like, this really nice-looking bar. But yeah, all the citizen housing is kind of bland. One monochrome, you know?
Yeah. It's an intentional disenfranchisement.
Yeah, the main other building that's built out of concrete is the barracks, which are like looming right over the citizen housing. There is like a shadow cast upon everything else.
Yeah.
Which actually takes me to my next point, which is that none of the syndicate live around the people. So, like, Witness lives in a giant apartment way above the citizenry. KHX is on that mountain. Carmelina has, like, the syndicate tower. Council has their penthouse suite thing. Doom has a yacht way outside. Sam is up on a mountain. Lydia, you really only find her as far as, like, where she's stationed, kind of at the very tip of the shore. Yuri also you meet in the gardens around the syndicate building. The only person who is at all close to the, well, I guess there's two people that are close to the citizen housing. There's Lydia, who I mentioned is kind of right at the shore. But they do have a lot of these, like, bus stops around it, so maybe the citizens were allowed to pay for that or something.
Yeah.
But the other one is Crimson. And Crimson is maybe the character who's been the most disillusioned and harmed by the council, because you know, she was kind of made an idol against her will, and she was objectified against her will. And so she lives underneath the citizen housing in like the sewers. But I think it's very, very intentional that she is the one that's closest to their housing, because she sort of is the one that's also felt the brunt of the system the most.
Yeah. She's a syndicate member, but like she is also like kind of used as a tool more than a lot of the other syndicate.
Yeah.
Probably all of the other syndicate that's on the island at that point.
Yeah.
I find it interesting as well, and I'll say minor spoiler warning, we're not getting into specific spoilers, but like, without saying too much about the ending, there is no big systematic change. Like, the entire council is dead, sure, but like, even at the very end, you kind of get the feeling that it's not going to, like, the next island already has kidnapped citizens.
Yeah.
It already has syndicate members. It, you know, depending on how the trial goes, it probably already even has a leader of the syndicate and new council members already. So, like, it's not going, like, you cannot fundamentally change it. Now, in dialogue, you can position yourself against it. You, like, one of the big things that you talk to Henry about regularly is Henry's basically like, why should I cooperate with you? I'm a citizen. You guys literally use us as cattle, and you can agree with him. You know, you can agree that, you know, the gods are all capricious, selfish bastards, that the citizens are just chattel that are used and sacrificed. And at the end of it, you still go on to the next island.
Yeah.
At the end of it, you haven't fundamentally changed the system.
Okay, I really want to talk about the spoiler stuff now.
Yes, yeah. Okay. So let's get into full spoiler territory. Themes forward, very good. We'll be talking about more themes as well, but like, just if you are interested and this has sort of like piqued your interest even more, set up, like, stop now, because we're about to spoil the mystery.
So we've already talked about the pre-Island 24 stuff. Let's go into what happens on Island 24. So Lady Love Dies was exiled because she gave in to a god's temptation, which is kind of weird because they're supposed to work with the gods. I never really understood the exact specifics of what happened, but she was exiled. At some point, Henry Division was born from a single mother. His dad was a syndicate member, Eyes Kiwami. Remember that name. Henry was poor and had a tough upbringing. He admits that he, like, did small crimes for attention. At some point, he was approached by Yuri Knight, who gave Henry a book on consulting demons and communicating with demons. Henry summoned demons using that book, destroying his apartment block and becoming possessed. This demonic corruption sort of created a ground zero for the demons, like, coming in, and that's the Dead Zone area. Grace Bloodlines, the exorcist, was called to exorcise Henry's demon. However, during the exorcism, Akiko, who was escorting Henry, also brought along Carmelina. They were trying to convince Henry to kill Grace Bloodlines. He didn't cooperate, so Carmelina strangled Grace Bloodlines to death.
Yeah.
Henry was arrested for the murder. At some point during this whole scuffle, since there is no more exorcist, Witness to the End was able to capture a demon and research the demon in a secret bunker in the Dead Zone. Later on, this is a bit closer to what happened recently. I should also mention that there were two chunks of flesh carved out from, what is it, Old Grudge?
Crying Grudge, or something like that.
One of the old gods, the one that is currently, like, right outside the island in, like, a little pyramid.
And also the only one that's on the island.
Yes.
Island at all, yeah. Should be noted.
The only one you meet in person. Two pieces of flesh were carved out. Witness had one, and Carmelina had the other. At some point, Crimson Acid was asked by Witness to seduce KHX so that Crimson Acid could get the key to the second Holy Seal. KHX had designed the second Holy Seal and was the only person outside of the council to know how to do it. After Crimson learned how to access it, She gave Lydia the information to do so, and Lydia accessed the computer to learn how to access the second Holy Seal. A bit later, Yuri Knight had closed off all the boat rides earlier than supposed to, and he snuck into KHX's house to try to find the key to the second seal. When he was confronted by KHX, Yuri threw KHX off a cliff, killing KHX. Yuri got the information, he accessed the key to the second seal, so he knew how to do it. Then, because the demon invasion had started to happen, the whole island jumping sequence was set in motion, the citizens were sacrificed, the syndicate was starting to be moved. During this time, maybe a little bit before, somebody had snuck into Doom's lab and stole council blood, a vial of blood saved from one of the council members. I believe it was Sam who did it, but I'm not sure quite.
The evidence generally points to Sam, probably Sam.
Yeah. Sam at least kept the council blood and the carved chunk of flesh that witness had in a freezer in the back of his bar. So, the night of the murder, Lydia and Sam, or at least the night before maybe, they took Lydia's transdimensional car on top of the council building, cut open a grate used for ventilation, and rappelled inside the council building to the lobby. Then, they used a space helmet, which you need to go through the second seal, since Lydia knew how to access it and go through it. They used the council blood to break the third holy seal, which was the blood of a council member. And then they used the carved chunk of flesh to go through the fourth one, which is a carved chunk of flesh from an old god. Inside, they delivered a crate that had a wireless receiver lock on it. And then they left. Then, later that the night of the murder, here's the big thing. So, Akiko brought two prisoners from the prison before the slaughter and took them outside of the sort of council building. On the night of the murder, the two guards outside the council building, which were the first Holy Seal, were supposed to be killed as part of the whole plot, the conspiracy. Akiko replaced them with the prisoners, killed the prisoners, drew a sigil that was only found on Henry's body outside of the prisoners, and in general set it up to make it look like they were killed using a knife that Henry had. She dressed the prisoners up to look like the guards as well. Then she brought Henry into the barracks from where he was prisoned. She made Henry drink a bunch of council blood to make it look like he drank a bunch of council blood. And then I believe they also took some of his blood so that they could make it look like he used the third Holy Seal lock. And then she took Henry back, locked him back up, and then burned part of the tunnel leading to the prison island he's on with thermite. Then, at some point, sort of near midnight, Witness stepped out of his apartment to take a call. This call was him activating the wireless receiver in the crate. Inside the crate, he had found a demon, and that was the demon he had captured a long time ago, and it was kind of contained in there. While Witness was taking the call, aka opening the receiver, Carmelina, who was with him, stepped outside and used a secret corridor that she had created, that's basically just portals throughout the island, to find her son, Dainanagate. Yes, we haven't mentioned Dainanagate yet. He is the final NPC you can talk to. He is a character that only appears very, 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 very late in the story. He was the son of Carmelina and Aiz Kiwami. Did you remember that name? So
bonus points.
Yeah.
You remembered the name.
And if you remember that Carmelina had one of the carved pieces of flesh, she had fused it onto Dainanagate's body. So while Witness was messing with his phone, Yuri Knight met Carmelina after Carmelina grabbed Dainanagate. Yuri Knight took Dainanagate up through the second seal, since Yuri knew how to access it. At this point, by the way, the guards were already swapped for the prisoners and killed, which is why they couldn't see them.
Yeah.
There is a portal that leads into the council building, into the lobby, so it might have been skipped, but I don't remember if Yuri Knight knew about the portals.
I think he did. I think he specifically mentions that he, got Dainanagate and, got them through the portal.
Right. So he met with Dainanagate, took him through the second seal, since Dainanagate had blood of Aes Kawami just genetically or hereditarily, he was able to go through the third seal. And because they had a piece of flesh kind of fused onto him, he went through the fourth seal. Yuri was like, all right, see ya. My work here is done. Inside the council penthouse, kind of at the same time, the demon was released by witness and Dainanagate entered. In fact, it might have been that the demon was released like a few minutes beforehand, because witness mentions that he took the call 5 minutes before midnight. It's unclear exactly when at that point the demon had appeared, but in any rate, Montserrat had a gun. Montserrat shot the demon in the skull, which prevented the demon from killing anybody. But when he shot Dainanagate, Dainanagate was struck in the chest, but he didn't die immediately. The bullet went through Dainanagate and was lodged in the wall, but Dainanagate, using a knife, was able to kill all the council members. Now, Dainanagate being the son of Carmelina, he was also able to use the sort of architect powers. And so he didn't want to get caught in the council room. So after he killed everybody, while he was still bleeding out, he left, creating a portal in the wall that took him back to the like hidden vault he was hiding in. And then Lady Love Dies is called. My reading is that Dainanagate was the one who was directly responsible, but Carmelina had orchestrated this conspiracy with Akiko and Yuri as well. But then Witness was doing his own thing with Lydia, Sam, and Crimson. And Witness wanted to scare, or he says he wanted to scare the council, not that he wanted to kill them. So he might have been expecting the demon to get shot anyways.
Yeah.
So
Witness's ultimate goal, according to him, is just like, Witness's ultimate goal is basically that, like, he feels that the council lost sight of the gods, which, I mean, they kind of did.
Mm-hmm.
And so he just sort of wanted to instill the fear of God in them,
mm-hmm.
not necessarily kill them.
Yeah. Whereas Carmelina wanted to kill the council. And between her, Yuri, and Akiko, there's plenty of motivation and ability to do so. So, oh boy. I guess what I want to start with is Henry's position in all of this, and I guess also Grace Bloodline's position. So the reason why Grace Bloodline's was killed is because without an exorcist, Henry would still have the demon inside of him, making him a scapegoat. But additionally, a lot of the ways they try to scapegoat Henry are things that they don't actually know about demons, because nobody except Grace Bloodline's really knew anything about demons. And even One Last Kiss, who, since we've already done the spoiler alert, is Grace Bloodline's ghost, doesn't really tell you much, other than, like, I don't know, maybe. And yeah. Shinji, who is a demon, is like, I don't know, maybe. But so, like, things like Henry's demon gave him super strength, which let him burst through the bars, or because Henry had a demon inside of him, he could breathe through space, which is what you need the astronaut helmets for. And so a lot of these are just conjecture, just done by, like, you don't know what demons do. Maybe they do let you breathe in space. and so not having Grace Bloodlines there meant they couldn't actually confirm or deny any of that. Now, the reason why Henry is so important as a scapegoat, I mean, he was like the illegitimate child of a council member. He grew up in a troubled family with just a single mom. But I think overall, like, The thing is that Henry was a citizen. You know, he repeatedly says, like, I'm going to die anyways. You might as well execute me. Like, he knows he's going to die. He's kind of just doesn't. He hates everybody because he was put in a losing position from the start.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a very clear, like, Henry is the window into the working class, that, like, through him, you really see how bad the conditions are. There are, of course, a lot of, like, memorabilia and, like, little discarded trinkets and stuff. And there are the ghosts with, like, regrets that you have to help. But with Henry, you directly see how the actions of the syndicate hurted somebody. And, I mean, it's important that that's there. But, like, I don't know what it is. It's just that, like, Henry is very clearly supposed to be someone who is a victim of circumstance and of, like, poverty. more than anything else. He was a troubled kid because he grew up poor, and you know, he could only get attention by like basically lashing out or acting out. Yuri found him because he was an illegitimate child, but also because he was the perfect person to have, like, you know, to kill somebody. He had a track record of being a troubled kid.
Henry as like allegory feels very much like the like, you know, poverty breeds crime sort of angle of like, you know, Henry as a person is, you know, troubled kid born into poor family, born into citizen family in this case, that just sort of like, you know, causes crimes because there's nothing else to do and is sort of then, you know, perfect for the scheme. And like it feels very much like a direct allegory of how, you know, the ruling class TM like just sort of uses the lower class, and especially like the crime lower class, as just pawns. You know, in the US we have literally the highest incarceration rate of the entire fucking world, and we have that not because we necessarily have more crime than anywhere else. We only technically do, I suppose, but like the main reason that we have that is because prison labor is free, if not just very cheap. Like the prison complex, it isn't just private prisons. Like anything made by a prison is made in America. Prisoners can make jeans and then the company can say made in America. It's just slave labor, but made into a like neoliberally acceptable form. Mm-hmm. And so like it feels very much like, you know, Henry, like citizens are all just that, all just slave labor, but that's Henry is kind of like the allegory for, you know, the convict who's a repeat offender, because once you get out, there's no recourse. Once you're in the system, you're just in the system.
Yeah. Nobody wants to hire an ex-con.
Yeah.
Also, none of the syndicate members other than LD actually care about Henry. Most of them either detest him or obviously want to use him, or they just don't care. Like Doom, Lydia, Sam, none of them really care about Henry at all.
Yeah.
And so there's this very clear allegory for like the othering involved in like criminals or the lower class, if you will, the working class.
Yeah.
There's a sense of classism, really any sort of ism that is targeted towards somebody from a higher class is present here.
Yeah.
He's very convenient because nobody wants to believe that he didn't do it.
I find the conflicting conspiracies interesting, because Carmelina's conspiracy is effectively a, like, Carmelina's conspiracy is kind of selfish in that it's like, she wants recognition for her work. Her father fucked up, and so she will never be able to go on the council, but she's also the one who's built all of the previous islands and has built the perfect 25, and she'll not get any recognition for that. But Witness is very much the exact opposite. Witness believes that, is entirely a true believer in, you know, work is its own reward, you know, worshiping the gods is its own reward. And so it's an interesting kind of like parallel where, you know, both greed and pride can lead you to the same outcome, basically.
Yeah, it's I don't know if it's pride necessarily. It, to me, it always felt more like, So Witness's thing is that he feels like the council is more so concerned with their own survivability and like perfection than it is about helping resurrect the gods. But to me, it feels like Witness's like selflessness towards the gods is more still a selfishness, in that he wants people to devote their entirety to resurrecting the gods, regardless of any sort of danger or risk imposed.
Yeah.
And so I think Witness's sort of position isn't that of like pride, but more of still another kind of greed, one that is worried about, you know, progressing to this like uphold the system even if it costs people their lives.
Yeah,
because like, for example, Doom's father died in a war that the council sent him on. And so there's a very clear example already of a character whose father was a member of the syndicate dying for the purpose of reviving an old god. And so you can compare that to what Witness wants, and it still feels very selfish.
Yeah.
His zealotry, or his, like, righteousness is above everybody else in his eyes.
He is literally holier than thou.
Yeah. So, to go back to the blood motif, so, like, blood is money, but also we mentioned needing the council blood to enter the third holy seal. That is because blood is also a form of identity. Everybody has, like, a blood code, kind of like a social security number that you never tell anybody.
Yeah.
And they have these doors that literally require somebody's blood to enter. It's a special kind of lock. And so, like, the council room, that's the third holy seal, but also Witness's secret demonology bunker, or romanceology, if you will, that was also coded as a blood lock. And for one thing, I think that's also super interesting that they have these identity locks that are clearly very easy to sneak through if you just draw some blood from somebody or steal from the blood bank that Doom has, like the database. But I think in a greater sense, blood also represents lineage in, like, heritage or, you know, stuff like that. Because Carmelina, her crime, not a crime, but, like, her motivation was because of her parents. Her parents did something and she had to pay for it. Akiko, her motivation was she wanted the guards to come with her. She wanted the guards to not get sacrificed. But they had to get sacrificed because they were citizens. So they were victims of their own blood. And Henry, obviously, all of the stuff with him is that kind of because of the situation he was born in. And so I think there's this really interesting element of how, like, they've tied their whole society around blood. But also a lot of the problems are directly because of their, like, lineage, their blood. It's very much like, I mean, if you consider blood being money, then it could be that, like, it's like their economic status being sort of unchangeable. Like, it's hard to actually have upward mobility. You know, Carmelina will always be disrespected by the council because of her parents, or Henry's in poverty because he's a citizen, you know, that sort of thing. There isn't much upward mobility. There is stuff with, like, Yuri, but he's very clearly an outlier and basically a class traitor.
I mean, part of that as well is that he was literally chosen by a god. And it should also be noted, a god that was definitely working for her own ends.
Yeah.
Like, the whole thing of Yuri is that, like, a god is basically currently in the process of seducing him to get into a higher power for her own ends. Which is exactly what happened to Love Dies, by the way.
Yeah.
The reason Love Dies was exiled is because she was tricked by a demon into releasing them into the island.
Mm-hmm.
Very much ties in with the theme, because it's like upward mobility is only applicable if, you know, something much higher than you looks upon you and says, here's a couple scraps. You know, like, there is no upward mobility. There's just a couple of people who get very lucky, which also ties in very much with Crimson. Crimson, like, you know, makes the whole point of, like, yeah, I'm this pedestal of citizens that to go, oh, yeah, look, you could become this. But obviously no one will.
Yeah, there's also a lottery to go on a boat ride with Crimson, or, like, go on a date with Crimson. And I'm pretty sure they say that the lottery doesn't actually have a winning ticket.
Yeah, she specifically says, like, you know, she had dirt on the CEO, and so she was like, hey, take the winning ticket out.
Which is good for Crimson, but also kind of continues the theme of, like, there is no upward mobility. They'll never actually get a chance to meet with Crimson.
Yeah. It's the veneer of hope to shelter and, you know, placate the masses.
Yeah. So I want to bring up a thing that's a little more towards a digital interactive media hypothesis, which, by the way, I just realized almost spells dime, but it's dim.
Dim.
I need to work on this backronym a bit more. But, so, okay, so here's the thing. Demons.
Oh, wait. Digital interactive media extrapolation.
Yes. There we go. Perfect. Okay, so demons are able to enter through the psychic pathways that they use to contact gods. Demons have a shit ton of horns. You know who else has a shit ton of horns and weird, like, demonic features, if you will? The gods. You know who has been prone to, like, having really weird flesh and, like, madness-inducing palaces? The gods. Who requires blood sacrifices? The gods. But who causes them to leave the islands now that the god hunters cannot find them? The demons. Here's my extrapolation. My 10 cents, if you will.
Yes.
So, I think the gods are demons. They're like archdemons, maybe. But I think part of the big thing is that why would the gods want them to stop making islands if every time they leave an island, they get a giant sacrifice party of, like, all these blood sacrifices? And so part of me thinks that the reason demons keep coming to the islands is because the gods are hungry for a sacrifice. Especially just, like, it's too sus to me that, like, the demons go through the same pathways and that they look like... Even, okay, so the killer demon that you see, that, you know, the one that Witness was involved with, looks like one of the god statues. I can't be making this up.
Yeah, no, you're not. Like, I honestly, like, that works well both narratively and very thematically. Because, like, yeah, it would make a lot of sense that basically just the gods and the demons are the same being. It's just who has the power.
Yeah.
Because... You know, like, we revere the gods and hate the demons, but at the end of the day, the difference is that the demons are the ones who, I don't know, give power to the people sometimes.
Right, but the demons
are the ones brought about by the citizens.
Right, but the demons directly, like, bring sacrifices to, or indirectly, I guess, bring sacrifices to the gods because of the whole transfer process.
Yeah.
And so, like, I feel like continuing the allegory of gods or capitalism, this is very much like systems needing a target. It's sort of fascistic in a way. I accidentally bumped my desk. Sort of the, like, military industrial thing of, like, you know, people need a villain. They need somebody who we can go send wars to because we need to give money to the weapon manufacturers so we can buy weapons for our military. But we need to justify the spending to the Americans. So, you know, we're going to give money to developing nations and regions and give them weapons and say, have at it. And then as soon as there's a terrorist, you say, oops, our bad. But no, so, like, I that's to me what these demons feel like, is this, like, self-sufficient style of trouble causing profit.
Yeah, it's just a further hierarchy of humans causing, like... You know, the syndicate preys upon the citizens, but the gods are very obviously preying upon the syndicate. But the gods are also very obviously preying upon themselves as well. It's just, again, who's in what position.
Yeah. So I wanted to say that I was going to make a video on this. And then when we started this podcast, I was like, I kind of want to save it for the podcast. There is. So one comparison I want to make. Bear with me here. There is a song by Modest Mouse called Lampshades on Fire, and that song is about a very scorched earth, wasteful sort of lifestyle where you consume in excess despite any sort of, like, burning around you, and then as soon as everything's burnt down, you just move on. You know, they have, like, party in this place and then move on, talk about, like, stealing your jeans and all that. And then the final verse is, like, the land's on fire, so we're moving out. And then they're like, spend some time in outer space, find another planet, make the same mistakes. The fact that in Paradise Killer, they don't address the root of the problem when, you know, they have this whole execution feels like the exact same thing to me. That the syndicate are very wasteful. They're wasting lives. They're wasting time. They want to be in this sort of high power. And they'll do that until they destroy this island they work so hard on, because they don't care about any of it. They don't care about the people there or the stuff they've built. They just want to, they're fine with jumping ship to the next island.
Yeah, the only island that has any amount of, like, idea that it might not do the same is Perfect 25. And even Perfect 25, One Last Kiss, specifically explains that the way that Perfect 25 is built to have, quote, no more demons, literally will just mean that instead of infecting the land, they infect the citizens. So instead of having to jump ship, you'll just have to kill a single citizen every now and again, which this is the system that kills citizens en masse every single fucking day. Yeah. So who fucking cares?
Exactly.
It's like it is a planned obsolescence of lives of people that you've kidnapped. Yeah.
I have one more point to make.
I think I have one more as well, but you go first.
So this is about game design. We've talked a lot about the story, the theme, the world building, etc. So this is a mystery game, like I said, where you can kind of end wherever you want. It is concerned with giving player agency, but I think it gives the player too much. So, like, there's a lot of talk about, you know, class consciousness, class struggle, class empathy, sort of, you know, things like that. Now, so the way the game works is you go find all your stuff you want, then you do the trials. At the trials, each case file will be presented. You say who did it, and then you accuse them, you present your evidence, and then judge says guilty, and anybody who's guilty is sentenced to death. Now, note that I said judge says guilty instead of judge says whether they're guilty, because it doesn't matter who you accuse, they're always going to die. You can accuse Henry for every crime and kill him. You can accuse everybody of a different crime. There is a way to just kill everybody else through the trial. You can ignore that some people did things. Like, if you want to leave Lydia and Sam alive because you like them, you can't accuse them, even if you knew that they had a hand in, like, delivering the demon or breaking one of the seals.
Yeah, that literally the exact ending that I got was that, where I sort of didn't pick up on that, but also then, like, it just sort of made a lot of sense that obviously they're the ones who did it. But, like, I just sort of didn't want to kill Sam and Lydia, and so every time it came to them, I was like, I mean, I can just blame this on Yuri. Fuck Yuri.
Yeah, it's set up to give the player agency for their facts to become truth, but that left a really bad taste in my mouth for a game about how the upper class is abusing the working class. But then, after the trial, you keep your gun and you can kill or exile anybody you want. So even if you, like, only accused Carmelina's conspiracy, you could still shoot Lydia and Sam if you really felt like it. You could still kill Henry if you really felt like it, even if you exonerate him of all of his crimes. Also, you can exile the people that you didn't accuse in the trial, but you can't exile people in the trial. And note that, like, Lady Lovedies was exiled. She was exiled beforehand for a slightly different crime, but, like, you can't be like, okay, Akiko, you're guilty, you're going to be exiled from now on. So
yeah,
there is, for one thing, a really weird sense of agency in terms of exiling versus killing. But, like, there's the agency over, you could just let people you like not get tried, and judge is okay with that. And there's the sense that you could just accuse Henry if you want, and judge is okay with that, and just completely betray him. Or just, yeah, like, you're pretty much just the arbiter of everybody's lives. You're Judge Judy and Executioner. And so, it left a really bad taste in my mouth after the fact. I love the game still. I don't know how much of it is a ding against the game, but, like, it feels weird in a game that, like I said, is so focused on class consciousness that you're going to do this thing that's very much like an ACAB situation.
I think it's ultimately more, I will say that I think that the uncomfort can be part of the point. Like, a running motif, and by motif I mean an explicit phrase that is said multiple times, is the truth and the facts are not the same. Facts versus truth. It's the push and pull of what is real versus what is true. And, like, the trial is effectively your moment to be able to say, like, yes, I have all of the facts, but in this moment, I wield the gun. I can make the truth whatever I want it to be. And the question that you as the player have to ask yourself is, well, knowing the stakes, knowing that, you know, knowing that a guilty verdict is just immediate death, no other recourse. Am I going to present all of the facts, or am I going to shift it around a bit because I quite like Sam and Lydia Daybreak and don't want them to die?
Yeah, and I guess it is supposed to give you that test.
Yeah, like I did genuinely not pick up on Sam and Lydia, but like even if I had, I probably literally still would have not convicted them. Because I just like them. And, you know, Akiko, like, I kind of honestly didn't want her to die. I just sort of liked her as a person. I felt bad for her as a person, even though she's also, like, the head of the guard and wants basically martial law on Perfect 25. Which is a failing on me. I'm willing to admit. Yes. Akiko is the ACAB. But, like, it's... The actual trial is its own interesting web because, like, you are making a literal judgment. You are also kind of making a moral call. You know, everybody who did a crime had their own motive, and some are more legitimate than others. Looking at you, Yuri. Like, you know, Carmelita's motive was the fact that, you know, her father did a crime, and now her bloodline is forever tainted. Like, that fucking sucks. That is actually a good reason to be upset. And honestly, I would even say a good reason to want to wipe the board. We are not condoning the killing of any ruling class. That is not socially acceptable. But, like, the ultimate crime is also, you know... Then she used fucking Henry. Then she, you know, played around with the lives of citizens and...
Then she raised her son to be a killing machine with only one purpose.
Yes. I do have to say, like... that is the most bonkers it gets. The random son out of nowhere. There is foreshadowing. Like, if I had sat down and, like, really delved into it... Absolutely, there's foreshadowing of, oh shit, second son. But like, infamous second son. But just like, the way you find it is there's a rock that you break open and then you go into it. And then there's this dying man with a bullet wound in his chest. And he's like, I'm the secret son. It's me.
So it's really funny. It reminds me of a twist in the first Danganronpa game that I even quoted. I think it's really funny also because there's a lot of, like, pink stains above the vault where you find him. And in Danganronpa, all the blood is pink for, like, some weird censorship reason or something. I don't know. But it's just, it almost feels like a reference. Like, Makuro Ikusaba, the 13th student, is right here in this vault on this island. The 13th council member. The 13th syndicate. It's really surprising. That's, I think, the only twist that felt unfair as far as the story goes or the mystery. Because, like, there's a random guy who could also kill people, and there are also portals connecting places around the island.
Yeah, it's the only shot that, like, you can't call, I don't think, from, like, a reasonable standpoint, given what you have. But also, at the same time, like... It is surprising and kind of funny how off the wall it is. I also think that, like, I don't know, a good murder mystery has one or two of those.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't judge the game more harshly for it.
Yeah. It definitely, yeah. The like, part of the corridor connecting all the other portals is very much very vaporwave. Kind of looks like the menu screen from Broken Reality.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. But... Yeah, I don't have a whole lot else to say.
I want to criticize the game real quick.
Okay.
Okay, so there's a system of unlocking fast travel points. I like this. You spend blood currency to fast travel, or to unlock fast travel points, which are also the points at which you save. Interesting. I like it. That's not a thing in a lot of games. It was an interesting little thing. However, you also spend blood to fast travel. I understand the point of this. I understand the scarcity. There should be something at some point later in the game where it's like, hey, you know what? I'll give you the special friend discount because you're such a gosh darn golly good fellow because this has now served its purpose. I have now explored the island, and I just don't, I want to keep doing this, but I don't want to have this scarcity anymore.
Yeah. So with regards to this, there is a finite amount of blood crystals. You have, I would say you have more than enough, but you definitely, like, they exist. The reason that the payment exists is so that you explore and find all the little small things everywhere by walking, because there's a lot hidden around. But yeah, it's like, it feels like after you spend, like, I don't know, 50, Lydia should be like, I'm just going to give you the rest on the house.
Yeah.
Something where you're pretty much expected to have walked around a bunch by then, you know?
Yeah.
Because late game is a lot of, like, jumping between points of interest to talk to people.
Yeah. Which, also, speaking of which, the island is very interesting. However, also, it's very, it's labyrinthine in a good way and also a bad way. I love the labyrinthine, like, everything flows into everything else design, but also I couldn't find KHX's fucking apartment for 6 hours because I just didn't know where the fuck to go to find it.
I stumbled upon it because I jumped into the beach behind his apartment and it respawned me above to his apartment when, like, I was at ground level beforehand.
Yeah.
So I just accidentally found his place.
And I will also say, for reference, when you are playing this casually, I think that it's, like, it is annoying, but I don't think it's that big of a problem. However, if, I'm just going to throw out a spitball hypothetical here. Let's say you have this podcast called Bet Nerfer Go. And
I have to rename my esports betting team.
And you're playing this game, this big game, Paradise Killer, and you've been procrastinating on it for a while, and so you've really just sort of got to, like, get it done, and you really love it, and you love the exploring, but, like, you just sort of got to hop around and do everything, like, now, and not, like, in the slow manner that the game encourages, but, like, late game, you just sort of, like, want to get through it so that you can do this podcast with your friend Pat, and your name is Jalen. So, yeah, just, you know, hypothetically speaking, that would be a terrible situation to be in.
Yeah, that's why I play this in January.
I didn't do any of that, by the way. I actually played this in 2018 before it came out.
Yeah, secret beta version.
Yeah. All right. So yeah, I think we've exhausted the topic. Paradise Killer, very fun game, very interesting, very much thematically appropriate, and honestly probably the best one to round out Vapor May month.
Right. I want to mention that Paradise Killer's music doesn't have the slowdown and reverb a lot of Vaporwave does, but it does have the, like, jazz and reggae inspirations that Vaporwave music has. So
yeah,
it's like the song's vaporwave slows down, but at their normal speed. I wanted to mention that because it's not technically vaporwave music in the soundtrack, but the aesthetics are very vaporwave with, you know, the island imagery, the low poly imagery, the marble, the statues, the opulence, the beach imagery, all that.
Yeah.
And the UIs are very CMY sort of styled. And so, yeah, it's interesting because it feels like it's kind of leaving vaporwave in some aspects, but hanging on to vaporwave in other aspects. And I think that's also relevant in how the game is shifted away from corporations to higher class as a whole.
Yeah.
And that's why I think it was a good end.
Yeah. It takes those themes, but it kind of mythologizes them. Like, there are literal gods and demons, but, you know, the core struggle, the core class, the core, you know, divide between the you know, hope that one day you'll make it in the upper class versus the reality of, you know, soul crushing, like, labor, and the literal grinding of people into mush for gods for the higher purpose that is basically capitalism is still there and is still just, like, deeply ingrained into the story.
Check it out. It's a good game.
Yeah. Yeah, you can sleep with both a guy and a girl, so, yeah. You know,
Lady LD is canonically Vi or Pan.
Yes. And it does, I believe, pass the Bechdel test. You do talk with female characters about things that aren't about men.
Yes. Which is really not that hard to pass.
Not that hard to pass when you make a game in 2020.
Yes. Thank you for listening. You can follow us on any podcasting platform you like. Give us a rating. Give us some comments. Give us that sweet, sweet SEO engagement. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter at NetSurferPro, where we post teasers about our upcoming episodes. This one I was really late on because we were really late on the episode. I apologize for that. We'll be back to our regularly scheduled programming some point soon in the future. You can also follow me on Twitter at MattCraigGaming, where I tweet out things I'm thinking of, what I'm doing, what I'm watching, what I'm playing, and what I'm streaming, which I stream at twitch.tv/twack. That is twitch.tv/TWAK. I stream on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays, and I stream a mix of competitive games, roguelites, a little bit of single-player stuff here and there. Been playing a lot of Binding of Isaac, so come check that out.
You can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/GalenWilson. That's twitter.com/GalenWilson. I post my hot takes and retweet cool stuff about the world. You can find me on TikTok. Ooh, that's a new one. You can find me on TikTok at the exact same handle, GalenWilson. I have two TikToks out. One of them is me accosting my cat. The other one is me being horny on Maine. So check that out. You can find me on Twitch at twitch.tv/machinegunvampire. I might stream at some point. You can find me on YouTube at The Only Galen on YouTube. I think those are all my socials.
All right. See ya.
See ya.